Random House Audio presents The Wolf of Wall Street by Jordan Belfort. Read for you by Bobby Cannavale. May 1st, 1987. "You're lower than pond scum," said my new boss, leading me through the boardroom of L.F. Rothschild for the first time. "You got a problem with that, Jordan?" "No," I replied. "No problem." "Good," snapped my boss, and he kept right on walking. We were walking through a maze of brown mahogany desks and black telephone wire on the 23rd floor of a glass and aluminum tower that rose up 41 stories above Manhattan's fabled Fifth Avenue. The boardroom was a vast space, perhaps 50 by 70 feet. It was an oppressive space, loaded with desks, telephones, computer monitors, and some very obnoxious yuppies, 70 of them in all. They had their suit jackets off, and at this hour of morning, 9:20 a.m., they were leaning back in their seats, reading their Wall Street journals, and congratulating themselves on being young masters of the universe. Being a master of the universe, it seemed like a noble pursuit, and as I walked past the masters in my cheap blue suit and clodhopper shoes, I found myself wishing I were one of them. But my new boss was quick to remind me that I wasn't. "Your job," he looked at the plastic name tag on my cheap blue lapel, "Jordan Belfort, is a connector, which means you'll be dialing the phone 500 times a day, trying to get past secretaries. You're not trying to sell anything or recommend anything or create anything. You're just trying to get business owners on the phone." He paused for a brief instant, then spewed out more venom. "And when you do get one on the phone, all you'll say is, 'Hello, Mr. So-and-so, I have Scott holding for you.' And then you pass the phone to me and start dialing again. Think you can handle that, or is that too complicated for you?" "No, I can handle it," I said confidently, as a wave of panic overtook me like a killer tsunami. The L.F. Rothschild training program was 6 months long. They would be tough months, grueling months, during which I would be at the very mercy of assholes like Scott, the yuppie scumbag who seemed to have bubbled up from the fiery depths of yuppie hell. "Good," said the yuppie scumbag. "Now here are the ground rules. There are no breaks, no personal calls, no sick days, no coming in late, and no loafing off. You get 30 minutes for lunch," he paused for effect. "And you better be back on time, because there are 50 people waiting to take your desk if you fuck up." He kept walking and talking as I followed one step behind, mesmerized by the thousands of orange diode stock quotes that came skidding across gray-colored computer monitors. At the front of the room, a wall of plate glass looked out over Midtown Manhattan. Up ahead, I could see the Empire State Building. It towered above everything, seeming to rise up to the heavens and scrape the sky. It was a sight to behold, a sight worthy of a young master of the universe, and right now, that goal seemed further and further away. When we reached his desk, my yuppie nemesis turned to me and said, "I'll say it again, Jordan. You're the lowest of the low. You're not even a cold caller yet. You're a connector." Disdain dripped off the very word. "And till you pass your Series 7, connecting will be your entire universe. And that is why you are lower than pond scum. You got a problem with that?" "Absolutely not," I replied. "It's the perfect job for me, because I am lower than pond scum." I shrugged innocently. He offered me the seat next to his, along with some kind words of encouragement. "Look at the bright side. If by some miracle you don't get fired for laziness, stupidness, insolence, or tardiness, then you might actually become a stockbroker one day." He smirked at his own humor. "And just so you know, last year, I made over $300,000. And the other guy you'll be working for made over $1 million. Over $1 million? I could only imagine what an asshole the other guy was. With a sinking heart, I asked, "Who's the other guy?" "Why?" asked my yuppie tormentor. "What's it to you?" All I said was, nothing. I was just, curious. "His name is Mark Hanna, and you'll meet him soon enough." With that, he handed me a stack of 3x5 index cards, each of them having the name and phone number of a wealthy business owner on it. "Smile and dial," he instructed, "and don't pick up your fucking head till 12. Then he sat down at his own desk, picked up a copy of the Wall Street Journal, and put his black crocodile dress shoes on the desktop and started reading. I was about to pick up the phone when I felt a beefy hand on my shoulder. I looked up, and with a single glance, I knew it was Mark Hanna. He reeked of success, like a true master of the universe. He was a big guy, about 6'1", 220, and most of it muscle. He had jet black hair, dark intense eyes, thick fleshy features, and a fair smattering of acne scars. He was handsome in a downtown sort of way, giving off the hip whiff of Greenwich Village. I felt the charisma oozing off him. "Jordan?" he said in a remarkably soothing tone. "Yeah, that's me," I replied in the tone of the doomed. "Pond scum first class at your service." He laughed warmly, and the shoulder pads of his $2,000 gray pinstriped suit rose and fell with each chuckle. Then, in a voice louder than necessary, he said, "Yeah, well, I see you got your first dose of the village asshole." He motioned his head towards Scott. I nodded imperceptibly. He winked back. "No worry. I'm the senior broker here. He's just a worthless piker. So disregard everything he said and anything he might ever say in the future." Try as I might, I couldn't help but glance over at Scott, who was now muttering the words, "Fuck you, Hannah." Mark didn't take offense, though. He simply shrugged and stepped around my desk, putting his great bulk between Scott and me, and he said, "Don't let him bother you. I hear you're a first-class salesman. In a year from now, that moron will be kissing your ass." I smiled, feeling a mixture of pride and embarrassment. "Who told you I was a great salesman?" "Steven Schwartz, the guy who hired you. He said you pitched him stock right in the job interview." Mark chuckled at that. "He was impressed. Told me to watch out for you." He paused, letting his words sink in. "Anyway, Sir Scumbag over there was right about one thing. Connecting does suck. I did it for 7 months and I wanted to kill myself every day, so I'll let you in on a little secret." And he lowered his voice conspiratorially. "You only pretend to connect. You loaf off at every opportunity." He smiled and winked, then raised his voice back to normal. "Don't get me wrong. I want you to pass me as many connects as possible because I make money off them. But I don't want you to slit your wrists over it because I hate the sight of blood." He winked again. "So take lots of breaks. Go to the bathroom and jerk off if you have to." That's what I did, and it worked like a charm for me. "You like jerking off, I assume, right?" I was a bit taken aback by the question, but as I would later learn, a Wall Street boardroom was no place for symbolic pleasantries. I said, "Yeah, I love jerking off. I mean, what guy doesn't, right?" He nodded, almost relieved. "Good. That's real good. Jerking off is key. And I also strongly recommend the use of drugs, especially cocaine, because that'll make you dial faster, which is good for me." He paused as if searching for more words of wisdom, but apparently came up short. "Well, that's about it," he said. "That's all the knowledge I can impart to you now. You'll do fine, rookie. One day you'll even look back at this and laugh. That much I can promise you." He smiled once more and then took a seat before his own phone. A moment later, a buzzer sounded, announcing that the market had just opened. I looked at my Timex watch, purchased at JCPenney for $14 last week. It was 9:30 on the nose. It was May 1st, 1987, my first day on Wall Street. Just then, over the loudspeaker, came the voice of L.F. Rothschild sales manager Steven Schwartz. "Okay, gentlemen, the futures look strong this morning, and serious buying is coming in from Tokyo." Steven was only 38 years old, but he'd made over $2 million last year. Another master of the universe. "We're looking at a 10-point pop at the open," he added, "so let's hit the phones and rock and roll." And just like that, the room broke out into pandemonium. Feet came flying off desktops. Wall Street journals were filed away in garbage cans. Shirt sleeves were rolled up to the elbows, and one by one, brokers picked up their phones and started dialing. I picked up my own phone and started dialing too. Within minutes, everyone was pacing about furiously and gesticulating wildly and shouting into their black telephones, which created a mighty roar. It was the first time I'd heard the roar of a Wall Street boardroom, which sounded like the roar of a mob. It was a sound I'd never forget, a sound that would change my life forever. It was the sound of young men engulfed by greed and ambition, pitching their hearts and souls out to wealthy business owners across America. Every so often, a broker would slam his phone down in victory and then fill out a buy ticket and walk over to a pneumatic tubing system that had been affixed to a support column. He would stick the ticket in a glass cylinder and watch it get sucked up into the ceiling. From there, the ticket made its way to the trading desk on the other side of the building, where it would be rerouted to the floor of the New York Stock Exchange for execution. So the ceiling had been lowered to make room for the tubing, and it seemed to bear down on my head. By 10 o'clock, Mark Hanna had made 3 trips to the support column, and he was about to make another. He was so smooth on the phone that it literally boggled my mind. It was as if he were apologizing to his clients as he ripped their eyeballs out. "Sir, let me say this," said Mark to the chairman of a Fortune 500 company. "I pride myself on finding the bottom of these issues, and my goal is not only to..."
Sample complete. Ready to continue?